One of the things I've taken to heart very much as a preacher over the years is that context of what we read is really important. We do have to understand the context. Somebody once said to me many years ago, something I've taken to heart, a text without a context is a pretext. In other words, if you really want to understand what the message of the Bible is about, you do have to understand the verses, both in the context of the passage that they're in, the book that they're in, the Testament, and the whole Bible. But not only that, but in the context of how the readers and the writers would have understood what was being said. Because the context of the readers and the writers is very, very important. And I think it's important at the start of what I'm about to say this morning to say that as we start exploring these two verses, that's all I've got this morning, verses 9 and 10 of 1 Peter 2, as we start exploring those two verses that speak of privilege and position, I think it's important to realize that Peter goes on in verses 11 and beyond to talk about the responsibilities and the duties that those privileges and position brings to us. Peter is not in this passage that we're going to look at, these two verses that we're going to look at, seeking to inflate our egos or to make us arrogant. He is reminding his readers of what God has done and who they are in him, because he knows that God wants certain things to follow from that understanding. And I want you, I'd encourage you as you go away this morning, I want you to go away encouraged. I want you to go away thrilled at what God is doing. But I want you as you leave here to take with you a sense that that brings a responsibility. And I'd like to encourage you to read what follows in verses 11 and beyond, perhaps in your private study, so that you can take what we look at this morning and ask yourself the question, what does this mean for me living in Swanwick, Fareham, Parkgate, wherever you are in this 21st century? How do I live out the reality of what we've shared this morning? Why do I exist? What am I here for? From the beginning of time, man has been looking for the reason for his existence. And I think that's one of the most common questions that people ask from a very young age. Why do I exist? What have I been created for? What is my position in this world? If we just take verses 9 and 10 in isolation, they start with two very simple words. They start with the words, but you. That's why I took the context before, because Peter is making a distinction between those to whom he is writing and those he has been speaking about in the preceding verses who aren't reading this. I want to tell you, says Peter, about these people. But you, and those people in those earlier verses, haven't recognized who Jesus is. They don't understand who Jesus is. They haven't really got an appreciation of why he came. And actually, they find him a stumbling block. He's a problem. I don't really want to know anything about this, because if we let this man have influence on us, well, it's going to cause us all sorts of problems in the way that we want to live. He's a stumbling block. He's going to get in the way of what we want in life. But, says Peter, but you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people. I don't know whether you might disagree with me on this, but I can't think of another passage that I can apply this to. This seems to me to be the perhaps the most the titles that Peter gives to the people of God in this passage are perhaps the most exalted that there are in the whole of the Bible. That's how it seems to me. These titles are incredible. Let me read them to you again. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people. Taken together, those four pairs of phrases speak of a privileged position second to none. I cannot think of a more elevated description of the people of God in the whole Bible. I want to ask you this morning, have you got hold of your identity in Jesus? Have you got hold of what having Jesus in your life means for you and your identity? If you are a follower of Jesus today, then you are chosen by God, you're called by God, you're set apart by God, and you are invaluable. Wow. Peter says, you are a chosen race. I think these two detailed sentences bring to a close the first section of Peter's letter. And they contain a huge amount of information about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. They tell us, as Christians, who we are and what we are here for. When I share my testimony of how I became a Christian, I often use a phrase that actually might seem a bit odd. I often talk about giving my life to God. But Peter here reminds me why I use that phrase. Because he says, you are God's possession. Peter wants his readers to understand that if we have come to Jesus, we are a people within a people, a category set apart, a subset in the office, in the town, in the family, among our group of friends. We are people with an exalted status, a privileged position. But did you notice that we are set apart like that with a purpose? That you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. I'll come back to that. So what we see in verse 9 is that if you are a disciple of Jesus Christ, then this is you that he is describing. You are set apart. You are precious. And you are called to proclaim all that he has done in your life. Those who have received the words of Jesus and have been obedient to Jesus, trusting him in faith, have been born into the family of God. And as newborn children, we are part of God's holy temple. We're part of a chosen race. We are a royal priesthood. We are set apart as priests in God's service. This sentence is just absolutely brilliant. Peter takes two descriptions from Isaiah 43. Where God promises to do a new thing, tells his people Israel that he's going to do new things amongst them that are different to the old things that he did. And he sandwiches in between it the very beginning work that he did when he released his people from slavery. It seems to me that what Peter is saying here in this passage is that everything Israel was intended to be, you who follow Jesus now are. In other words, everything that was said about Israel in the Old Testament and what God was going to do with Israel is now about you. You are a part of his elect race. You are a royal priest. You are a part of a holy nation. You are his pride and joy. So let me unpack that a little for you to try and help us understand it. A chosen race, as I said, is a title taken from the back end of God's dealings with his people. It comes from Isaiah 43, verse 20, where God is promising to do a new work, to create a new beginning, to gather a new people together for his new purpose. And this new people that he is going to be calling together are both elect, chosen by him, and select. You see, the old nation of Israel has failed. God made promises through them and gave them responsibilities, and, well, it failed. So God says he's going to start again. From the rubble, he's going to call a new nation. And this new people is to be brought in through a new exodus, a whole new beginning, a new rescue. And then we have a royal priesthood, a title lifted from the beginning of God's dealings with his people in Exodus chapter 19, verse 5, where God's original people have been rescued from slavery in Egypt. And God determines that those he has rescued are to be people who are to be his very own kingdom of priests. Those two words, royal priesthood, they're very descriptive, aren't they? Peter is saying that every one of us who follows Jesus is royalty. Well, my name's King, so I'm okay. I've always been royalty. But you're now royalty. And we are royalty with a purpose to serve. And we serve as priests. And what's the responsibility of a priest? Well, the responsibility of a priest is to intercede and instruct. And we are royalty, not just of some temporary family, but we are sons and gods, sons and daughters of the Creator God, whose dominion is the whole earth, whose time of rule is for a whole eternity, not just for some temporary period of years. We are royalty, and we are ministers and servants. We're a priesthood. No longer, says Peter, is it down to a particular tribal group to be priests. It's not the Levites. Now, the whole nation that God is drawing together of his people is to be a nation of princely priests. A holy nation is also taken from Exodus 19. Because to be holy is to be set apart. We're used to that idea of people being set apart because they're special. Every time I get on an aeroplane and turn right instead of left, well, the set apart ones, they go left. They go to business or first class. I go right. I go with the hoi polloi. Every time I go into London and walk around London and see Buckingham Palace, or to Windsor and see Windsor Castle. We're used to the idea that important people are set apart. This nation of God's choice is a royal nation in his service, set apart as his very own people. And how are we to be set apart? Well, by morally distinct behavior, by being different, by being godly in character, by being gracious indeed, being like God, set apart for him. And the final descriptive pair, a people of his possession, goes back to Isaiah again, and again the back end of God's dealing with his people. To be God's possession is to have been purchased by him for his own use. To be God's possession is to have been created and recreated as his pride and joy. To be God's possession is to be his delight. The children of Israel were to be his treasured possession. And in the new creation, his people are his precious possession. You know, it seems to me that's why people who come to follow Jesus experience great peace and the end of all striving. When you grasp this, when you come into a meaningful relationship like this with God, there is great peace. There is a sense of belonging. This builds up self-esteem. It gives us the confidence of being loved. And for some, it's the first time that they find that they are a treasured possession. You know, I've read so many heartbreaking stories of people who've been bruised and battered and beaten down by the world in which we live. They've lost all their self-esteem. But when they come to Jesus and discover that he loves them, he cares for them, he restores them, and they find that once again they're a treasured possession, that the God who created them loves them so much that he gave his son to die on a cross at Calvary. The great creator God, the king of the universe, the only one who really matters, says to you, you are a chosen person. You're a royal priest. You're part of a holy nation. You're my own possession. We love giving people titles, don't we? We love giving people titles. It's great. Wouldn't it be fun to give Christians we know titles? How about Her Royal Highness, Her Holiness, Princess Maureen, DA, Divinely Appointed, HE, Heavenly Elect? That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Or how about His Majesty, the Most Reverend Cardinal Prince Paul, CG, Called by God, PC, Possessed by the Creator? The God who breathed out His Word, who brought His creation into existence, without whom nothing exists that has been created, this God sets you apart, owns you, and delights in you. Whatever your background, whatever your experience, if you have put your trust in Jesus, you are now royalty, set apart for God's service. But as I said, there is a purpose behind all of this. And that purpose is there in verse 9, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. You see, we're not only a set-apart people. We're a speaking people. We're a singing people. We've been a singing people this morning. God is determined to have people who delight in him. And that's what we've been doing this morning. As we've sung these hymns, we have been declaring who God is, how great he is, how wonderful he is, how majestic he is. Even as we've come to the table and celebrated, remembered the death of Jesus, we've done it delighting in what he has done for us. God is determined to have a people who delight in him. And he has made us this holy nation, this royal priesthood, this great people. He has taken us from darkness into light because he wants us to praise him and to be a speaking people, speaking out what he has done. And when you think of what he has done for us, why wouldn't we do that? The word to proclaim is out-announce, to declare out entirely. And the focus of our speaking out is the excellencies of he who has called us out of darkness. And I want you to understand this morning that you can't announce without some written or verbal word. I heard a story some time ago that they'd had to cancel an event for town criers because they couldn't shout anymore. Now we're all to be town criers. Now we're all to be our own broadcasting corporation. Now we're to be we are all to be publishing houses. Shout it out, write it down, declare the excellencies of what God has done. Oh, we do that sort of thing all the time, don't we? Did you see that football match yesterday? What a great game that was. West Ham, did you see West Ham beat Chelsea? Wow, that was amazing, wasn't it? Or you should see this new computer I've bought. This new computer I've bought is absolutely fantastic. You want to get one of these. God, you want to know what my girls did? Oh, my girls, they were in a play last week. They were absolutely... We're great, aren't we, at declaring the excellencies of things around us, the products we buy, the sports performances that we'll remember forever. We're an amazing sales force for those things. When it comes to Jesus and what he has done for us, Peter says, when you think about what he's done for you, speak it out, write it down. Tell of his excellencies. Tell of what he has done, how he has taken us with all our baggage, all our grime, all our dirt, and made us into a royal priesthood and a holy nation. And we are his delights. I don't think I can shout loud enough. What wonderful truth about Jesus will you boast about today? What's going to get you so excited that you can't wait to tell someone else? Verse 10 takes us in a fascinating direction. Peter is quoting Hosea 2, which refers to Israel as the bride of God. But here he uses this verse, as does Paul in Romans, to show that the things previously promised to those genetically related to Abraham are now available to everyone. Peter is looking, when he writes 1 Peter, to an audience of people scattered across northern Turkey from different regions, different worldviews, different philosophies, who are now the very people of God brought together as a single nation. And as I look around this room, I'm pretty sure that this room is full of people from different backgrounds, from different countries, from different experiences. And yet, as we sang in that great song that we sang, didn't we? We've all come together as one, united as one people, loving each other as a single nation. And I think it's a good idea. I think it's great that we have that verse 10. Let me find it. Because it reminds us, once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. You see, if we are tempted to start thinking elitely or superiorly, is that such a word? If we are tempted to have our egos raised and to think as thus as superior or elite in some way, then we need to remember that we are welcomed in on the basis of mercy. It's the grace of God that has brought us into this relationship. It's not something we deserve. It's not something we've earned. It's not something that we merit. All our histories are different. And I can speak for myself, and I suspect I can speak for everyone in this room. We all have things that we hope no one ever finds out about us. You see, we don't deserve this. We could never achieve it. But now we have this privileged position. As you walk out of here today, if your faith is in Jesus, then know this: whatever your past, whatever your background, whoever you are, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ, you are a member of a chosen race. You are a royal priest and part of a holy nation of God's own people. And as you remember that, declare his excellencies. Tell the world that they too can become a part of what you're a part of. And what I'm a part of, and know this great love and blessing of this Almighty God who we serve. We're going to sing again. We're going to sing 1217. We're going to sing of the power of the cross. Oh, to see the dawn of the darkest day, Christ on the road to Calvary, tried by sinful men.